Our peaceful holiday in Cornwall had been shattered by the murder of Maggie Buckley during a fireworks party at End House. It soon became clear that it was not she who was the intended victim, but her cousin Nick, who, through the death of her fiancé, had inherited the vast fortune of Sir Matthew Seaton. For her own safety, Poirot had installed her in a nursing home, and none but ourselves was allowed to see her.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and Simon Williams as Captain Hastings in Agatha Christie's Peril at End House.
Back again already, Monsieur Poirot? I hardly expected to see you so soon.
Yes, mademoiselle, I am like the Jacques in the case, always popping up again. This will of yours... Hastings and I, we have searched all over End House, but we find it not. Think. Try to remember when you saw it last.
The trouble is that I never have particular places for things. I probably shoved it away in some drawer or other.
You did not put it in the secret panel by any chance.
The secret what?
Your housekeeper, Ellen, says there's a secret panel in the drawing room.
Oh, I've never heard of such a thing. I suppose Grandfather must have known about it, but if he did, he never told me. Are you sure Ellen isn't making it all up?
No, mademoiselle, I am not at all sure. Oh, but we are wandering from the subject. Your will, the last will and testament of Magdalene Buckley.
I put that in, last will and testament, and said pay all debts and testamentary expenses. I remembered that out of a book I'd read.
You did not use a will form, then?
Well, there wasn't time for that. I was just going in for my appendix op. Mr. Croft said will forms could be very misleading.
Mr. Croft? The fellow who lives in your lodge?
Yes. It was he who asked me if I'd made one. I'd never have thought of it myself.
Very helpful, the excellent Mr. Croft.
He got Ellen in to witness it. Oh, of course. Oh, what an idiot I've been, letting you hunt round End House. Charles has got it. My cousin, Charles Vyse.
Ah, so that is the explanation.
Mr. Croft said a lawyer was the proper person to have charge of it. So we sent it to Charles. I should have remembered. He sent me those carnations.
They're very pretty.
And the roses are from George, and the lilies are from Freddie. Mm. Oh, and look here. Grapes. Don't they look scrumptious?
Oh, you have not eaten any of them?
No, not yet.
You must eat nothing that comes from outside. Nothing, you comprehend?
You really think they might try again?
No, do not think of it. You are safe here. But remember... Eat nothing that does not come from the nursing home. And now, mademoiselle, if you would be so good as to write a note to Charles Vyse, authorizing him to show us your will. We have just time to catch him while he is still in his office.
I beg your pardon, but I really am at a loss to understand.
Has Mademoiselle Buckley not made her instructions clear?
But, my dear sir, no will has been entrusted to my keeping.
Come on.
Well, as far as I know, my cousin never made a will. She certainly never consulted me.
But she wrote it herself, you understand?
On a sheet of notepaper. She posted it to you.
Well, in that case, all I can say is that I never received it.
Oh. Then there is nothing more to be said. There must be some mistake.
Certainly there must. I never received anything of the kind.
Is he lying, do you think?
Impossible to tell. One thing is clear. He will not budge from the position he has taken up.
So... what do we do now?
We go to see the Crofts, to see if they remember what happened. It seems to have been very much their doing.
Of course I remember. It was when she went in for her appendix operation.
It probably wasn't appendicitis at all. These doctors, they're always cutting you up if they can. It wasn't the kind you have to operate on. She'd had indigestion and one thing and another, and they'd x-rayed her and they said out it had better come.
Well, I asked her if she'd made a will. Well, more as a joke than anything else.
She wrote it out there and then.
And what was done with it?
I posted it off to Vyse myself in the box by the gate.
But Mr. Vyse says he never received it.
You mean it got lost in the post? That's impossible, surely.
Anyway, you are certain that you posted it?
Certain, sure. I'll take my oath on it any day.
So which of them is telling the truth? Croft or Vyse?
I don't see what Croft would gain by lying. The will's got nothing to do with him. And his statement tallies exactly with what Nick said.
You are right. But all the same, I am glad that Monsieur Croft was doing the cooking when we arrived. He left an excellent impression of a greasy thumb and first finger on a corner of the newspaper that covered the kitchen table. I managed to tear it off unseen by him. We will send it to the good Inspector Japp at Scotland Yard. I cannot help feeling that our genial Monsieur Croft is too good to be genuine.
That afternoon, the police sent round to us a very curious piece of evidence which they had turned up while searching the garden of End House, a torn scrap of paper.
Must have money at once. If not, you know what will happen.
Do they say whether there were any fingerprints on it?
There were none. Of course, it may have nothing to do with the case. Does the writing look at all familiar to you?
That reminds me of something. That note from Mrs. Rice that we found in Nick's desk.
Yes, there are resemblances. Yet I do not think it is the handwriting of Mrs. Rice. Come in.
Oh, Commander Challenger.
Just looked in to find out if you were any further forward.
Ah, parbleu, at this moment I am feeling that I am considerably farther back. I seem to progress en reculant.
One step forward and two steps back, eh? I've been hearing all about you, Monsieur Poirot. You'll get to the bottom of it, all right.
That I swear to you. I am the dog that stays on the scent and does not leave it.
Got any ideas?
I have suspicions of two people.
I suppose I mustn't ask who they are.
I should not tell you. I might probably be in the error. But tell me, Commander, you would like, I think, to marry Mademoiselle Nick.
I've always wanted to marry her.
But Mademoiselle was engaged to another man, and she has died the death of a hero.
So it's true. Nick was engaged to Michael Seaton. I heard a rumor this morning.
You never suspected it before?
I knew she was engaged to someone. She told me so 2 days ago. But she didn't give me a clue as to who it was.
Entre nous, Michael Seaton has left her, I fancy, a very pretty fortune. She weeps for her lover now. But the heart consoles itself.
So that's where you've got to, George. They told me I might find you here.
Good afternoon, madame.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Rice.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry to intrude. I merely wanted to ask George whether he'd got my watch back.
I called for it this morning. Here you are.
It was a watch of rather unusual shape, round like a globe, set on a strap of plain black moire. I remember that I'd seen a similar one on Nick Buckley's wrist.
I hope it'll keep better time now.
It's rather a bore. Something's always going wrong with it. Am I interrupting a conference?
No, indeed, madame. We were only talking gossip. How quickly the news has spread that Mademoiselle Nick was engaged to that brave airman who perished.
So Nick was engaged to Michael Seaton.
Does it surprise you, madame?
A little. I don't know why. He was certainly very taken with her last autumn. They went about a lot together. And then after Christmas, they both seemed to cool off, rather. As far as I know, they hardly met.
They kept their secret well.
On account of old Sir Matthew, I suppose. He really was a little off his head.
You had no suspicion, madame? And yet she was such an intimate friend.
Nick can be a close little devil when she likes. But I understand now why she's been so nervy lately. And I ought to have guessed from something she said the other day.
Your little friend is very attractive, madame.
Jim Lazarus certainly seemed to think so at one time.
Oh, everyone falls in love with Nick at some time or other. Oh, my God.
What? You're not well, madame?
No, I'm all right.
What?
George, darling, don't look so worried. Let's talk about something exciting. I want to know if Monsieur Poirot is on the track.
It is early to say, madame.
Yes, I suppose that's... I'm sorry, I've got ahead. I'll go and lie down. Perhaps tomorrow they'll let me see Nick.
You never know what that woman's up to. Nick may be fond of her, but I don't believe she's fond of Nick. But there, you can't tell with women. It's darling, darling, darling all the time, when damn you would probably be closer to the truth.
Challenger was in an expansive mood and insisted on accompanying us down to the flower shop in St. Lou, where Poirot was endlessly indecisive about what he should send to Nick. Eventually, he settled for orange carnations in a gold basket tied with a large blue bow, accompanied by a card on which he wrote with an ornate flourish...
With the compliment of Hercule Poirot.
On the following day, the inquest on the death of Maggie Buckley took place in the old courthouse. Her father, who had come down from the north of England, formally identified the body, and I gave evidence of finding it. Proceedings were adjourned for a week, and Poirot decided we should set off for London.
All is peaceful here. Mademoiselle is safe in her nursing home, and the watchdogs, therefore, can take leave of absence.
Our first port of call was Messrs. Whitfield, Pargeter and Whitfield, solicitors both for Michael Seton and his uncle Sir Matthew. They confirmed that Seton had in fact left a will, a scrap of paper, but perfectly legal, bequeathing everything to Magdala Buckley.
Making her, as the worthy Mr. Whitfield so bluntly put it, a target for any ambitious fortune hunter. So, that is settled, mon ami. It was as I thought. Now let us join the good Inspector Japp for dinner at the Cheshire Cheese.
I thought you'd given it all up and were growing vegetable marrows in the country, Poirot.
Oh, I tried, Japp, I tried. But even when you grow the vegetable marrows, you cannot get away from murder.
Well, you mustn't be depressed, old cock. Even if you don't see your way clear, well, you can't go about at your time of life and expect to have the success you used to. We all of us get stale as the years go by. Got to give the young uns a chance, you know.
And yet the old dog is the one who knows his tricks. He is cunning. He does not leave the scent.
Oh, I thought we were talking about human beings, not dogs.
Why, is there so much difference?
It depends upon your point of view, or the dogs. You really are a caution, Poirot. You always were. You look just the same. Hair a bit thinner on top. But the face fungus fuller than ever.
Come on, what is that?
Japp is congratulating you on your moustaches.
Oh, they are luxuriant, yes?
Well, anyway, I've attended to that bit of business you asked me to look into. The fingerprints are on the scrap of newspaper you sent me.
Yes?
Nothing doing. Whoever your Mr. Croft may be, he hasn't passed through our hands.
Is he known in Australia?
Oh, it doesn't look like it. I wired Melbourne. But they've got nothing on anybody of that name or description.
It was worth a try, at least. And what about the elegant Mr. Lazarus, the art expert who knows so much about cars?
Firm's got a good reputation. Quite straight and honourable in their dealings. They're in a bad way financially, though.
Why is that?
A slump in the art market, or so they tell me.
Did you ever get a report on that painting, Poirot?
Oh, yes. It is worthless. £20 at most.
Now, how about a bit of stilt in a glass of port?
It's on its way.
Sorry I couldn't come up with anything, Poirot. Barking up the wrong tree, I expect.
Perhaps. Poirot is a good dog, but sometimes he follows the wrong scent. And sometimes, when there is no scent to follow, he noses around, seeking always something that is not very nice.
It's not a nice profession, ours. And yours is worse than mine. Not official, you see. And therefore, a lot more worming yourself into places in underhand ways.
I do not disguise myself, Shap. Never have I disguised myself.
You couldn't. You're unique. Once seen, never forgotten.
Ah, vous croyez?
Only my fun, don't mind me. But here's the Stilton and the port.
It turned out to be a very merry evening talking over the good old days. But I could see that Poirot was worried about the case. I had the feeling that for once he was going to fail. We caught the train back to St. Lou the following morning. There was a message waiting for Poirot asking him to telephone the nursing home. Urgently.
Come on. Say it again, I beg. When? Oh, yes, yes, I will come at once.
What is it?
Why did I go away, Hastings? Why did I go away?
Tell me what's happened.
Nick is dangerously ill.
Oh.
Cocaine poisoning. They have got at her after all.
It's been touch and go, but she's going to be all right. The trouble was not knowing how much she'd taken of the damn stuff.
She will live.
Oh, yes, she'll live.
But how did it happen? Who has been allowed in?
Nobody has been allowed in.
But then...
It was a box of chocolates.
But I told her to eat nothing. Nothing that came from outside.
I don't know about that. It's hard work, keeping a girl from a box of chocolates. She only ate one, thank goodness.
How was it done?
Quite clumsily. The chocolate cut in half, the cocaine mixed with the filling, and the chocolate stuck together again. An amateur, homemade job.
May I see Mademoiselle?
If you come back in an hour, I think she'll be well enough.
Escape number 5, Monsieur Poirot.
Oh, Mademoiselle.
Your old nursing home hasn't proved so safe after all.
If only you had obeyed orders, Mademoiselle.
But I have.
You were supposed to touch nothing that came from outside.
No more I did.
But these chocolates.
I thought they would be safe. After all, you sent them.
Huh? I never did anything of the kind.
Oh, but you did. Your card was on the box.
What?
It's in the drawer of my bedside table. See for yourself.
Here it is. With the compliments of Hercule Poirot.
You see?
I did not write this.
It looks very like your handwriting, Poirot.
It was so like the card that came with the orange carnations. I never doubted that the chocolates had come from you.
Why should you doubt? Oh, but he has genius, this man. Genius. With the compliment of Hercule Poirot. So simple. I have been tricked, outwitted, as though I were a little schoolboy. But it shall not happen again, I promise you. Come, Hastings.
What was so strange was that Poirot had no difficulty in tracing where the box of chocolates had come from. It had been delivered by Mr. Lazarus. He told us the chocolates were a gift from Mrs. Rice, and that she had asked him to take them to the nursing home.
What's all this about Nick being taken ill?
Oh, it is a most mysterious affair, madame. Tell me, did you send her a box of chocolates yesterday?
Yes. She asked me to get them for her.
She asked you to get them?
Yes.
But she was not allowed to see anyone. How did you get in?
I didn't. She telephoned. She asked me to send her a 2-pound box of Fuller's chocolates.
How did her voice sound? Weak?
No. On the contrary, it was quite strong. But different somehow. I didn't realise it was she who was speaking at first.
Until she told you who it was?
Yes.
Now, are you sure, madame, that it was your friend?
Well, it must have been. Who else could it be?
That is an interesting question, madame. Now, could you swear that it was your friend's voice?
No, I couldn't. She certainly sounded different. I thought it was the phone or perhaps her being ill.
Would you have recognised the voice if she hadn't told you who it was?
No, I don't think I would. But who could it have been, Monsieur Poirot?
That is what I intend to find out, madame.
What exactly has happened to Nick?
She is ill. Dangerously ill. Those chocolates were poisoned.
The chocolates I sent her? But that's impossible.
Not impossible, madame, since she is at death's door.
Oh, my God. I don't understand. The other, yes, but not that. But it couldn't be poisoned. You're making some dreadful mistake, Monsieur Poirot. It can't have been the chocolates.
I understand nothing, but nothing. I am in the dark. I am a little child. Who stands to gain by Mademoiselle's death? Madame Rice. Who buys the chocolates and admits it? Madame Rice. And Madame Rice takes cocaine. There is no mistaking it. And there was cocaine in those chocolates. What does she know, Madame Rice? She knows something, but I cannot make her speak. Oh, I tell you, Hastings, it is all very dark, very black.
Always darkest before dawn.
Oh, spare me the proverbs, Hastings. Now, if you would be the good friend, the good, helpful friend...
Yes?
Go out, I beg of you, and buy me some playing cards.
I suspected it was simply an excuse to get rid of me. However, I misjudged him. That night, when I came into his sitting room at about 10 o'clock, I found him carefully building a house of cards. It was an old trick of his to calm his nerves.
One needs the precision. One card on another, so, in exactly the right place. And that supports the weight of the next card. And on top of that, I place another... But I have it, Hastings! I have it! Mademoiselle Nick is dead.
What? What's happened?
No. Not really dead, but it can be arranged. Yes, for 24 hours it can be managed with the help of the doctors and nurses and the police being entendu.
But what's the point of it?
4 times the murderer has tried and failed. The 5th time he has succeeded. We tell everyone that Mademoiselle Nick is dead, and we wait to see what happens.
The events of the next day are completely hazy in my memory. I was unfortunate enough to wake with a fever. I have been liable to these bouts since I contracted malaria some years ago. I spent most of the time dozing in an armchair with a rug over my knees, so that much of the day takes on in my memory the semblance of a nightmare, with Poirot coming and going as a kind of fantastic clown.
Comment ça va, mon ami?
Oh.
I come this moment from ordering wreaths, immense, stupendous, and large quantities of lilies. Everyone orders something, each more exotic than the last. My little plan, it will make the fortune of the flower shops.
I dozed off for an hour or so, and when I opened my eyes, Poirot was back again. Clearly, he was having the time of his life.
I shall not dress for dinner tonight. I am too much the broken old man. I shall eat hardly anything. The food untasted will remain on my plate. But in my room, I will consume some brioche and some chocolate eclairs, which I had the foresight to buy at a confectioner's. And you?
Some more quinine, I think.
Ah, my poor Hastings.
When I next awoke, he was sitting at a table writing.
I am compiling a list of questions concerning each person. They may have no bearing on the crime, but there are things that remain unexplained. Would you like to hear?
Yes, I would. I feel rather better, I think.
Very well. I will read them to you. A. Ellen. Is she speaking the truth about the secret panel? If there is such a thing, why does she not remember where it is? Has she read Michael Seaton's letters? B. Mr. and Mrs. Croft, where do they really come from? Is there some possible connection with the Buckley family? C. Mrs. Rice, does she know that she is Mademoiselle's residuary legatee?
Very likely, I should have thought.
Who is the boyfriend mentioned in her note who supplies her with cocaine? Why did she suddenly turn faint that time in this room? Is she lying about the telephone conversation? What did she mean when she said, I can understand the other, but not this?
Yes, I've been wondering what she meant by that.
D. Monsieur Lazarus. Why did he offer £50 for a picture that is practically worthless?
Perhaps he wanted to do Nick a good turn.
Oh, but he is a dealer. He does not buy to sell at a loss. E. Monsieur Weiss. Why did he say what he did about his cousin's fanatical devotion to End House? Did he in fact receive the will? But why lie about it? F. Commander Challenger. I have no question against his name. Is that in itself suspicious? Which leaves us with X, the unknown. Is it possible that there is some mysterious person we have failed to take into account?
What do we do now?
We wait until the morning, my friend. Tomorrow, if I am not mistaken, certain things will arise.
The following day I awoke feeling weak, but with the fever abated. And with the morning's post came a letter from the parents of Maggie Buckley, whom we'd met briefly at the inquest, enclosing a note she had written to them on the day of her arrival at End House, the day of her death.
If you would be so good as to read it to me, Hastings.
It's lovely weather here. Nick seems very well, if a little restless, but I cannot see why she should have telegraphed for me the way she did. Tuesday would have done just as well. No more now. We are going to have tea with some neighbours, Australians who have rented the lodge. Nick says they are kind, but rather awful. We'll write tomorrow.
The voice of the dead. And he tells us nothing.
Poirot positively rushed to the phone. Although his own contributions to the conversation were entirely non-committal, when he returned, his eyes were sparkling with excitement.
That was Monsieur Charles Weiss, Mademoiselle Nick's will, signed on the 25th of February, arrived at his office this morning.
Do you think he's speaking the truth?
You mean, has he had the will all along? It's certainly very curious. But I told you that if Mademoiselle were supposed to be dead, we should have the developments, and here they are.
Extraordinary. I suppose this is the will naming Frederica Rice the residuary legatee.
Monsieur Weiss said nothing about the contents, but there is very little reason to doubt that this is the same will.
So, we are back to our principal suspect.
Frederica Rice.
Or Freddy, as her friends insist on calling her.
Now, why disfigure such a pretty name? Freddy Snippagerie.
Well, there aren't many abbreviations of Frederica. It's not a name like Margaret where you can have half a dozen.
What was it I was trying to think about when the phone rang? Yes, something about the letter written by that poor murdered girl that struck me as curious. Let me look at it again.
He read it over to himself several times while I watched the boats racing across the bay.
Oh, but I have been blind, blind.
Well, what on earth's the matter?
So simple, and I could not see it. Oh, how could I be such a miserable imbecile?
Well, what is it? What couldn't you see?
Wait, do not speak. But yes, yes, it all fits in. All the things that have puzzled me, they all have their place.
You mean you know everything?
Nearly everything, all that matters. I shall send a telegram asking two questions, but the answers I already know. They are here, in the little grey cells.
But what happens when you receive the answers?
Do you remember that Mademoiselle Nick said she wanted to stage a play at End House?
Hmm.
Tonight, we shall stage such a play. Oh. But it will be a play directed by Hercule Poirot, and there will be a ghost in it, for Mademoiselle Nick will have a part to play.
What's it all about?
No, I will say no more. Tonight my little comedy will reveal the truth. It will be a play such as no one has ever seen. All our suspects shall be assembled at End House, and the murderer will be revealed.
In part four of Agatha Christie's Peril at End House, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat and Captain Hastings by Simon Williams. Chief Inspector Japp, Brian Pringle. Nick Buckley, Gemma Saunders. Frederica Rice, Susanna Hamilton. Mr. Croft, Terence Edmund. Mrs. Croft, Richenda Carey. George Challenger, Andrew Wincott. Charles Weiss, Stephen Critchlow. The Doctor, Mark Holloway. Peril at End House is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.